Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. If words don't hurt, then why do we find the need to censor them? If words don't hurt, then why does that phrase even exist? I was on the light rail the other day, and there were a pair of people behind me, a very young man and his even younger son. The boy was at that age where everything in the world is fresh and new and wondrous. "What's that, Daddy?" he asked, pointing out the window. His young father played along, smiling. "That's a bird, son, a bird." The pattern repeated with the seats, the windows, and even the sun. I was smiling along with them, happy at such wonderful interaction between father and son. The train pulled up to a station. "What's that, Daddy?" The son pointed out the window at a man around his father's age, with long, supple dreadlocks swinging beautifully in the sun, nails perfectly cut and polished. "That, son, is a faggot, a sissy boy." I sat in shock, breath totally gone as the doors opened and they got off. Little hand in big, they walked happily down the street, side by side, as the train pulled out of the station. The truth of the matter is that words do hurt. They hit hard and fast, and they can take your breath away just as quickly as any fist. The pen or the mouth is mightier than the sword. More important, continued thoughtless use of words and language wears down the psyche just as continuous physical violence does. In some cases, I would say that words hurt more so precisely because we're taught that words will never hurt us, that we're not allowed to be offended by another's lack of so-called political correctness. Words hurt, but we're not allowed to acknowledge that hurt, and so the wound becomes a chronic condition, eroding the spirit the way that arthritis erodes a joint. "You're retarded," a mock insult yelled across a crowded park, one friend laughing at another's stupidity. But at the bench next to them is a girl for whom that phrase is no laughing matter. She's most likely been called that before, and definitely not in jest. And today, hearing that phrase, even in passing, is just a little too much, even though the other girls aren't even aware of her presence. Words hurt, but we're not allowed to acknowledge that hurt, and so the wound becomes a chronic condition, eroding the spirit the way that arthritis erodes a joint. Imagine for a moment that you have a chromosomal condition that means that you never feel full, that makes you, as you've heard it at the doctor's office multiple times, morbidly obese. Food and eating are a constant battle that will never end, that without outside intervention of some kind will most likely kill you. You've lived your life with locked refrigerators, eating separately from your family so that you don't steal food from their plates. You have what are glibly referred to in school as defiance issues that the school can no longer handle, so you get kicked out. Your parents find a different school, a small one that caters to those with differences, and so you visit, and the headmistress is nice enough, showing you where you'll sleep, where you'll eat. And then she sees a young man coming back from break. She smiles. "This is Billy," she says, excitedly. "I told you, we had a Prader Willy just like you." And that's that. The latest in a long line of clinical diagnoses, clinical language, and a medically defined life. You are no longer a person. you are completely defined by your syndrome. And this is how you are viewed by people who are most supposed to understand you. Words hurt, but we're not allowed to acknowledge the hurt. And so the wound becomes a chronic condition, eroding the spirit the way that arthritis erodes a joint. In the world of diversity and disability, there has been admirable work to address some of these issues. From campaigns like Spread the Word to End the Word and distribution of Words Hit cards aimed at stamping out the derogatory use of the words retard and retarded from common speech, to more formal efforts to address those with intellectual and other disabilities in a manner that humanizes rather than dehumanizes. And in this case, I'm talking about person-first language, which addresses someone as a person first and foremost, not defined completely by a medical issue or disability. This is Billy, a young man who is thriving here at this school and who, like you, has Prader-Willi syndrome. The style guide of the American Psychological Association and other organizations now codify this person-first language, requiring it in written communication. But we have a long way to go. As a staff member of an online support forum for those with varying neurological and mental health diagnoses, I see this firsthand. As a family-friendly forum, we have a small list of words that are automatically censored by our filter. Most of these are words that are varying incarnations of the 7 words you can't say on television, or ones that the Federal Communication Commission would also block or fine the broadcaster for using. An ongoing discussion, though, centers on the constant battle against the use of the words retard or retarded to refer to oneself or others as stupid. Many want us to add that word to the list of words we censor. I have to say that I disagreed vehemently. I disagreed because I didn't want to serve as the word police. I disagreed at first because although I had always been a square peg in a round hole at school, nobody ever called me stupid. Nobody ever called me retarded. I disagreed at first because I didn't have a visceral reaction to that word. And then someone used the word fag as a synonym for stupid and insisted that it was an accident, despite having been warned about it before. And I had to explain my very strong and visceral objection to letting that word stand to a fellow staff member whose first language was not English and to whom that word was just that, a word. I have to say that I still disagree with censoring either of those two offensive words, either on the forum or anywhere else. I disagree because to say, don't say that, in the case of slurs, or to say this, not that, in the case of person-first language, is, in a sense, taking the easy way out. It gives people a simple formula of what to say or not to say, without having to think about the consequences of using or not using those words. Person first, disability second is great in theory, but what about someone whose first language is American Sign Language and who has grown up capital D deaf? What about someone with autism who views autism as an integral part of who they are? As Jim Sinclair puts it, saying person with autism suggests that autism can be separated from the person. But that's simply not the case. Autism is hardwired into the way my brain works. I am autistic because I cannot be separated from how my brain works. Jim then goes on to say that the enforced separation of autism from the rest of self-identity is offensive, as it relegates a large part of what has shaped Jim and Jim's identity and being to the periphery. Robotically and thoughtlessly referring to someone who has made their preference known as someone who is hearing impaired or a person with autism instead of deaf or autistic, despite their explicit preference, means not seeing the person at all. In short, I disagree with censoring these words because stamping out language doesn't stamp out the problem, because language use is merely a symptom and not the disease. Don't say retarded. It's offensive and a slur. The cynic in me asks me what word will replace retarded as the horribly offensive word used to address a marginalized group of people 10 years from now. Idiot, imbecile, dumb, lame, and my favorite, invalid. Put the emphasis on the other syllable and think about it. In response to being told that he has to refer to his fellow classmates as special needs instead of stupid, Christopher, the autistic narrator in the book The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, says, "Siobhan says we have to use those words because people used to call children like that, like the children at school, spaz and crip and mong, which were nasty words. But that is stupid too, because sometimes the children from the school down the road see us in the street when we're getting off the bus, and they shout, 'Special needs, special needs.'" He goes on to puff out his chest and recite the mantra, "Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me." Clearly, the words do hurt. This is a call to acknowledge that hurt and the reasons behind it, and to think about what we say before we say it. Not to do so in a way that is paralyzing, but to do so in a way that is liberating, in a way that allows us to stop and listen to what others have to say, to begin to be in relationship with people from different backgrounds to whom we may not have given a second thought. We are, after all, paraphrasing Ogden Nash, all brothers and sisters under our pelts, going around pulling doors marked push and pushing doors marked pull, just like everybody else. Until we stop and see an individual human being rather than a wheelchair or a schizophrenic, the language that we use to describe that person will inevitably belie our intent to be inclusive, to be welcoming, and to be respectful. True person-first language is the language of advocate David Hingsberger, who in a blog post about a young man's discovery that autism was a part of his identity says, "Andrew, no doubt, has faced and will face bitter battles with society and those who refuse to accept what he knows to be the truth, that Andrew's identity is bigger than personality and smaller than autism, and that somewhere between those two points is Andrew more and Andrew less. Goldilocks would have called him just right, and so do I."